This week on Android App Addicts, Mark gets political, Dore hates Android Auto, and Street Fighter is still the king. Episode 499, one away from the big 500. Then we'll be ready to go to Daytona or something like that. I am your host, Mark, sometimes known as the Sultan of the Soapbox Cockerel. Wow, I used to be good at this. And I am here joined by the great one, the Grand Poobah of the Podnuts Network, Steve, the door-to-door geek McLaughlin. Hey, Steve. Dore, how you doing?
Hey, Mark. First off, I'm the one with the speech impediment. I'm supposed to be the one having
it's just a brain impediment, actually.
Yeah. And two, Eric, I'm going to funnel Eric's essence. You should now address me, Eric would say, as a award-winning podcast.
Yes, I heard about that.
He's not. I love him dearly, and I have to because he's never going to let me forget it. You know.
Yes, well, I was busy recovering from my attack of crematosis. You were receiving awards.
And the only thing I can tell you, Mark, is there's only a few things that would have made that event even better, because it really was, as far as I'm concerned, among the best events I've ever been to. And if I could have bought Mark Cockerel a steak dinner, I think it would have been a good time. But no pressure.
Well, I certainly would have preferred to be there with you on that particular night when you were in Florida reveling in the goodness that was PodFest Southwest. I was sitting in an emergency room alongside my very ill wife, who had the flu so bad she needed IV medications. So I would have traded places with you in a heartbeat.
Well, I hope she's doing not only better, but good by now.
Yeah, she's fine now. And I was such a good nurse to her, took such great care of her, and was so intimately related to her. I then got the flu about 1 week later. But I had the flu shot. And for those of you vaccine deniers, let me tell you, the difference between having the flu shot and not having the flu shot is about 12 days of misery. My wife was sick to the point of needing emergency care for about 16 days. I felt pretty bad for about 4 days. And the only difference is that I had the flu shot and she didn't. So get the dang vaccine, people.
You know what I say, Mark. Vaccines cause adultism.
Yes. Yes, they do. You know, if I never hear another person say, the only time I get sick is when I get the flu shot, I'll be fine with that. Because A, that's just not possible. And B, right, you're a moron.
Well, they are, I'll put it like, to me, they're normal human beings who are very subject to and not aware of cognitive dissonance. It's the same people who say, you know, me and my wife were talking about barbecue, and that very next day on my Google advertisement, it showed me barbecue. It's listening to me the whole time. But what they fail to realize is the 9,999 different things they talked about that week that they never saw an ad for. And they forget the other times when they didn't have any vaccine and got sick.
Yeah. You use the wrong term. It's cognitive bias is what that is.
Bias.
Yeah. When you think about the thing, you only notice the things that you want to notice. Yeah.
See, and I was hoping you would suffer from cognitive bias and not notice my misrepresentation of cognitive
confirmation bias. That's it. Dang it. We were both wrong. Confirmation bias. Okay. When you are biased to the things that confirm what you already believe.
See, remembering these specific terms is almost like trying to do math on a live podcast. I know it's in the most over harsh statement of the word, it's a mental impairment. Mm-hmm. The difference is it's something we all suffer from. The only difference is, do you recognize it? Do you admonish it? And do you try to not make life decisions based upon human weaknesses?
Cognitive dissonance is holding two incongruous thoughts in your head and not noticing it. Like, for example, save the children by banning guns, but go ahead and kill unborn children with abortion. That is a case of cognitive dissonance.
And I'll just say We here at Pod Nuts hate talking about anything political, but I'll just say this. There is no easy answer to any of these questions. If there was, we would have already answered it and all agreed and moved forward. Yeah. You know, some things in life require a lot of in-depth self-realization, heavy communication without assumption, and just coming to decisions instead of just arguing and screaming you're wrong.
Yeah, I know we're not a political show. We don't talk about politics, and feel free to edit this out if you want to later. But I just want to say, you know, with this latest round of the school shootings in Florida and people talking about, you know, guns are the problem. The fact that teenage and pre-teenage children have so little respect for human life that they would take one in any way using any utensil is the problem. And I'll just leave it at
that. Yeah, and I recorded a DDG episode that I didn't release because I started to talk about this, Mark. And one of the, to me, the key problems not being acknowledged by any side, by any representative of any form of media that I've ever listened to is when, you know, in my life and everyone I directly communicate to, the most ignorant time of their life when they were surrounded by the most blasphemous, rude people, mean-spirited people was in school. Maybe if a small group of normal kids, in air quotes, would have showed other kids empathy when they noticed nobody else was, maybe these kinds of things would happen less. Maybe that was what was different in the 50s and 60s. Maybe it was more normal for more people to show more empathy. I don't know. And that's the whole thing. I don't know. I understand. I don't know. And I'm terrified of this country making knee-jerk emotional reactions like we did 9/11 and the Patriot Act. You know, so let's just not be hasty. I agree something needs to change. What that is, I doubt somebody screaming into a microphone on the nightly news or some network television show is going to have any of the right answers.
The only thing, the only thing, as Martin Luther King said, hate cannot drive out love, only love. I mean, hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. And if we had a little more love for each other, hate would be driven out.
Yeah, at least once a year or so, I listen to one of his speeches from beginning to end. A very poetic, waxing man. To say a gift of speech is quite the understatement there. So I'll just quote the movie Canadian Bacon with John Candy and say, can't we all just get along?
Yes, yes. I did want to... completely wrong. You ever just do the wrong lead-in for the thought that you were thinking? Like, the other day I was, and that's not at all what you were going to say? What is that?
Yeah.
There's got to be a word for that, too. But just today, I was talking with a friend of mine, and he's my age, 45, 46 years old, and we were talking about, you know, the golden years and the best, you know, the TV show Wonder Years. You know, what was your golden age? And he was like, for me, it was, you know, the late 80s, coming into the 90s. It was high school. It was the best time of my life, man. And I was like, you and I had very different high school experiences. My childhood pretty much sucked from about birth until 20 years old. And high school was one of the worst times of my life. And Dor, I know, you know, enough of your story to know that it's kind of the same thing for you. But it's interesting that the people who had high school as the best time of their life think that everybody had that experience. But I really think it's probably a pretty small percentage of the world.
Yeah, the nicest way I'll put it is that was the most frequent time of my life. I probably had both homicidal and suicidal thoughts. I had weird moments in my life. Like, I remember from the age of like 7 to 14, random times when we were in the woods building forts and stuff, digging big, huge 12 by 12 by 10 foot deep holes, putting boards and trees over top, making forts, kind of being fantastic times. I remember, honestly, being on my skateboard by myself, learning how to kickflip as being a fantastic time, but being shoved into government institutionalized buildings with teachers who sold drugs, bought kids beer, had sex with kids, I found to be a very, and watch a girl right in front of me get hit by a tractor trailer and dragged 40 feet because we had off-campus lunch. I found a very bad time of my life.
Yeah, that was...
but then I found Mark Cockrell, and it got better. And I'm with you. Probably the best time of my life was starting 20s.
Yeah,
yeah.
So while we're talking about things I don't understand, I was reading an article today about something I totally don't understand, and maybe you can help me with. And it was a project to turn a Raspberry Pi into an Android Auto device. I don't get that at all. A, I don't understand the allure of Android Auto. You have more experience with that than I do, so maybe you can tell me. But if you're going to do that, why pick a Raspberry Pi? That seems like exactly the wrong hardware to do that with.
It, without a shadow of a doubt, complete hack job. Number one, Raspberry Pi is not open. Send all hate mail to mail@podnuts.com. Raspberry Pi is not open. The GPU is not open. They open spec'd the GPU, but it's not open. Thus, there is no official Android anything that will ever run on anything Raspberry Pi, period. Starting there. So you really should never do it on a Raspberry Pi. But two, Android Auto, I use it every day. It is the stupidest damn piece of technology I think I've seen since programming BASIC back in 97. It is one of the worst interactive experiences I've had in computing life. It never knows where I'm going, even though I travel the same route every day. The volumes never seem right. When I play my podcast, I got to jack my volume up to almost 40 out of 60, four. So I got to push it up over 2/3 to hear people talking in any podcast, even if the podcast is really loud. And then when a notification comes over my car, it blows my eardrums out. The map navigation works good. I guess that's good. Google Play Music is also at a low volume. Makes no sense. I would rather just take a $30 cheap tablet, slap it in my dash, and have actual Android.
You see, I have about a $6 mount that my phone goes in, and about a $60 Bluetooth thing because my car didn't have Bluetooth. It's too old for that. And so for roughly $66 and my phone, I have what I consider a better, and admittedly, this is coming from a position of ignorance because I've never used Android Auto, but what I consider a better experience with nothing. I just slap the thing on the dashboard and I'm done. I don't understand why somebody would want Android Auto at all.
It's like this. You know, normal swimming athletes shave and wax their body, wear the skin-tight thing so they go through water quicker. Well, Google said, you know, we can make this thing even quicker. We can cut off its arms and legs. We can just cover the whole thing in wax, staple some string to his forehead, and just drag him through the water. He'll hit better speeds. That's what Android Auto is like. They completely crippled everything about Android. Unless you're using one of their premium adopted applications like Messenger, I can't get messages on my screen. No Voxer messages come on the screen. No third-party chats come on the screen at all. Just Messenger, Google Hangout, stuff like that. Only applications that register as a audio interface in that ecosystem work. So there's many audio players and many podcasting clients I've tried in the past. I plug up to my car and I can't listen to podcasts when I drive because this developer didn't take the time out of their day to make this craptastic interface that you can't do anything in even. It is so hindered. It is so limited. I literally despise everything about Android Auto. The wife knows we have it, so we use it. I carpool with her. If it was me, I'd just put a mount in the middle of the dash and put my phone there and use my phone as a phone, not as a hindered, handicapped device. And, you know, they try to say it's for safety. That is such a bunch of crap. It is an unbelievable bunch of crap. So let's hurt everyone else's experience with that device, like the passenger who could be doing everything on that phone for me, in the name of safety. I don't buy it.
Whose responsibility is it to make sure that I'm not being a moron with my phone while I drive?
In my libertarian leaning view on that kind of thing, it's the person behind the wheel. I am responsible for everybody in that car, including myself.
As I saw I don't even know where I saw it. It was just one sentence, you know, a drive-by flamethrower, and it was like, raise the make a national law that you have to be 21 to get a cell phone. You know, okay.
That's going to help.
Exactly. I mean, is there something really so magical about the cell phone that it has short-circuited the ape brain in all of us and that we are suddenly unable to perform normal functions without it? One could easily make that argument just watching a group of people for a little while.
Yeah. I do think, you know, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds shouldn't be sitting in front of an iPad for 10 hours a day. You know, that kind of thing I can get on board with. Excess is what the problem is. It isn't itself. And I'd rather have an IQ test, an IQ test to vote, an IQ test to drive, an IQ test for a job, an IQ test to buy things. Sure, I'm good with that. But an age restriction, age to me is one of the most meaningless restrictions I've ever seen, because there are 26-year-olds I know that should not be drinking. I'll put it that way, in my state. And then when I was 18, I was just as mature as I was when I was 21. I was getting served when I was 14, but that's completely different. I don't. Clickbait articles. I don't know how they're going to die, Mark, but Lord, they need to die. There is one piece of good news, though, when it comes to clickbaity crap. I've been complaining about this, and I am the only person I've heard in any ecosystem, whether it be podcast, blogging, news, anything, about this. I despise the clickjacking I get everywhere I go when I click a link, and then there's a hidden Amazon affiliate referral link in there where they're basically hijacking my Amazon session. I can't believe Amazon's okay with it, but let's not go there. Chrome is doing at least one thing good, which whenever you're in the Chrome browser, if you have an Amazon affiliate link in your URL or any of those kinds of things where you see the, you know, the mile long URL, and you in the newest Chrome browser, you hit the three dots and then share, it will automatically remove all of the trailing crud out of the URL for any website. So that's at least one step in the right direction. I'm very happy about that, because I don't like when I'm on my phone and I'm in a chat, either at a Hangout or Boxer or Google Plus, and I get shared a link and I look at the link and it's literally like 200 characters long. Doesn't need to be. You know what I mean? They're just spreading disease as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I have a feeling that particular feature is going to be pared down, if not completely removed, in the near future. Because, you know, there are things that rely on that. For example, GoToMeeting will give you a really long convoluted URL that contains the meeting number of the meeting that you are, plus the sign-on credentials of the thing. So there are going to be a few things like that. That's just the one that came to the top of my head, that are going to be broken by this new feature. And I have a feeling that there's going to be more damage to that than people realize, more collateral damage.
I believe it, but just like Google manhandling in their way ads now on the full desktop browser, because they are the majority browser now, which means they can dictate to other people. I think they will tell people like that, fix your system. You should just have a unique URL, not a string after your URL. Strings after URLs is how vulnerabilities get penetrated.
It is a kludge. It's sending data through a URL using, you know, 1980s level technology. It is absolutely a kludge, but it's one that, as a coder, I have used many times.
Oh, yeah. I abused it, and I had to learn the difference between post and git, because sometimes I don't want people to see what I'm passing. That's, you know, just the way it is. I will say the only other thing of tech news that is happening that I'm affected by, that I would at least like to hear if you have any input on. I love the fact that foreigners outside the United States call Elon Musk Elon Musk. I just first got to say that. I've listened to lots of stuff, and they keep calling him Elon Musk, and I love it. I'm going to start calling him Ellen, because that's his name. The Boring Company, 3 weeks ago, got butt slammed by Maryland state government. They said, you signed a deal with the State Highway Administration. That was the wrong agency. That total contract is now null and void. Ignore it. You have to renegotiate. Which he said, fine. And a couple of days ago, he announced that the deal was struck. It is done. They are going to start boring into D.C., going underground to Baltimore and from D.C. to Philadelphia. I, for one, love the idea of being able to remotely work. You know what I mean? I love the idea I could live in the middle of Idaho as long as I have enough bandwidth and do a huge percentage of my job. Some people I know literally only once every 20-something days come into the office. I could see once every couple weeks just flying out for a day and doing that. But now with, if the boring thing becomes real and the hyper tubes become real, I could see living, you know, close to a major city, but not close to the major city you actually work in, where you spend 20 minutes in a car, come to the city, then spend 20 minutes in a tube, in basic terms, going to another city and then going to work. I love the idea of this. And it's underground, so other places might not have as easy as a time arguing it. Because like the high-speed rail, nobody wants a rail going through their county and not stopping to spend money.
I don't see that as a viable human transport in the near term. They'll work out the bugs. But right now, just inertia says that accelerating and decelerating that quickly is going to be an unpleasant experience for humans. But for cargo, you know, when we've turned FedEx overnight into FedEx in 10 minutes, that I think is going to be pretty revolutionary. But I think it'll be like 10 to 15 years of transporting cargo in that way before we're ready to transport humans in that way.
And yeah, that is the one thing in the Hyperloop test they did in Salt Flats, Nevada, I believe it was. The engineers made it very clear the, I can't think of the right word, the change in speed.
Delta V.
That's where yeah. That's what has to be very carefully crafted to minimize G-force, instability, that feeling kind of thing. If they can get the math worked out to where they can maximize the speed but make the acceleration not feel like such, then they have a success. And, you know, I don't want to sound stupid. To me, that's just math, figuring it out, maximizing it, hitting the right sweet spots, but making it economical. Right. That's the key. If you can make that kind of stuff economical, I can, for lack of better terms, I can see it blowing up. Maybe not exploding, but, you know.
I mean, we have a track record of this. The Concorde, the supersonic jet, spent most of the flight accelerating and decelerating. So it was at full speed for about a third of the time in the air. The other two-thirds, it was either accelerating or decelerating. So we know how to do that. And underground with, you know, with a vacuum tube type thing, we should be able to do it faster and better. But it's still one of those things where you're only going to be hypersonic for a very small part of the time.
Right. Unless you're literally going from D.C. to New York or something grandioso. And then since we haven't talked since then either, what about Starman, Falcon Heavy, being launched into, they're not really sure where, like the asteroid belt.
Yeah. Well, first off, it's the coolest Tesla commercial ever.
Ding.
But I work with geeks, as do you. And when I went to work the next day, people were just all kinds of excited about that. And I said, all right, let's just, you know, let's do some historical perspective here. I'm not taking away anything about how cool it was, but they just replicated something that had been done for the first time nearly 60 years ago. So we're getting back to where we were. And it's like, oh, well, it's an individual doing it, not a government. Well, that individual spent, when accounting for inflation, almost as much as the government did the first time. You just got to realize it's shameful that we've had to reinvent this technology. And also the boosters in the system is still a fraction of the power of the Saturn V. So
ding.
Yes, it's a thing. I'm glad we did it. I'm glad they're doing it. It's a good thing, but it is not a momentous thing. It is just a retracing of the steps that we've already made in the past and forgotten how to do.
Yeah, and I had to literally reprimand more than a couple of people. No, it's not the biggest rocket. It's not even close. Here's the thing. I always try to look at the best and the worst. If it can inspire people, great. I don't care how much it costs. I don't care if it ain't the biggest. I don't care about any of that stuff. That's awesome. That's cool. Can't put a price tag on that. I can't say I've ever inspired, you know, any number of people. But if that inspires people at a young age to get more interested in engineering, exploration, that kind of thing, cool. If it took private company to do it, cool. Whatever. I watched a video on YouTube by Curious Droid, a guy who wears some of the most heinous shirts I've ever seen in my life. And at the end of the video, he tells you what the shirt is and where he got it. He's proud of those shirts. But he went over a video, which I found interesting, about Nixon signing in to act the original space shuttle plan. and how there are many scientists out there that believe the initiation of the space shuttle was one of the worst things we could have done as a space thriving technology. It put a lot of things on hold. It put a lot of things backwards, where if that would have never happened, we would have easily already surpassed what Elon Musk did. The, for instance, was when the space shuttle was planned out, it was supposed to, in the end, cost $165 to lift a pound of matter into space, adjusted for inflation, $169. It ended up being in excess of $10,000. So it didn't really work out.
Gravity is a harsh mistress.
It is, and it is the it was one of the best advertisements for anything I've ever seen in my life, and I was almost bitter about it, because I don't even like Elon Musk. I like what he's doing, but I don't really like him. The one, because I'm afraid he's going to take all his money back to South Africa and leave us here. But let's just go. But watching those rockets come back down and land, oh, that was awesome. That was awesome.
And that part awesome. Is unique, right? So we talked about there's a whole bunch of stuff that was old news. Having a solid rocket booster automatically navigate back to its own landing point, that was super cool.
Yeah.
But those solid rocket boosters, again, are only a percentage of the overall cost of the spacecraft. So while it's a savings, it is not, you know, it's not going to revolutionize space travel.
Right. We're far from any actual revelation being done. I will say he did on an interview say a couple of days after that, he laughed and said, nobody, no organization, no company is going to be as far as we are right now with the success of the Falcon Heavy until 2023.
I buy that.
Which makes me feel sad, because I'm already past my midlife, I think.
That's only 5 years, you know.
I know. Well, by that time, I'm fitty. The big 5-0.
And it's all downhill from there.
At least that's what I'm saying now. And then when I'm 50, I'll say when it's 55, then it's all downhill from there.
Somebody mentioned used the phrase midlife crisis the other day, and my 9-year-old was like, Daddy, what's that? I said, well, you know, when men and just to a lesser degree women get to around, you know, the middle of their life, they start to look around and say, you know, this is kind of not all it was all cracked up to be. I haven't done the things I wanted to be. I'm not the astronaut double knot spy that I thought I was going to be. And sometimes they react badly to that. And my middle child said, so are you having a crisis? Cause you're at middle age. I said, no, I'm going to live to be 119. I'm nowhere near middle age.
Good man. Yeah. I don't have a sports car or anything like that. So I don't think I'm going to ever hit that thing. The only Android relevant thing I can even begin to talk about, Mark, is Mobile World Congress is launching, and I'm very sure of one thing. It's going to be non-spectacular.
That's
a good
thing.
You've said it now for over a year. Yeah, yeah. You've said it for over a year now. It's like the dial on the TV set. We used to go from one side to the other with phones really quickly, people making dramatic changes, people doing these big things. And now every phone I see, it's just a little tweak, just a little tweak, just a little tweak. So I don't think we're going to see anything even remotely spectacular. I'm sure the journalists are going to be screaming about things when in hindsight, 3 months, 6 months later, any normal person looking at it will say, yeah, it looks and acts just like the phone right before it. It's just this one little thing has changed.
Yeah. Well, wide-ranging discussion tonight, but this was in like 96, 97, somewhere around there. I read this article. It was when the Pentiums were all the rage, right? The first Pentiums came out, and they were cutting edge, literally melting hot machines. At that point, they were still liquid cooled. When you got up to the gigahertz range. And this article was like, ex-manufacturer of 386 chips sold more chips last year than it had in all the previous years combined. Well, the new hotness was the Pentium. Why would you be selling 386 chips? Well, because they're cheap, they're easy to manufacture, and now they're in your washing machine and in your car and your fuel injector, that sort of thing. So that has always been the trend. Like this year's cutting edge technology is in your child's toy in just a few years. So I'm excited when companies are pushing the edge, when we talk about these foldable screens and that sort of thing. And it's good that they're doing that, but we've reached a point now where it's going to take some sort of mass transition from everything we know today to something we don't know today. And until then, it's just going to be iterations of new stuff, and the old stuff will just become more pervasive. And that's great. That's why I can pick up a phone for my daughter for $280. That's a good, solid phone. It's because there's the gap between the best of the best and the mediocre is now pretty small. And that's not a bad thing. So boring phones and boring congresses like that, to me, are a good sign. And I know it's not sexy and it's not a great thing to write clickbait articles about, but I think for the state of the technology, it's a good thing.
Exactly. It's like life. It's like the stock market. It's anything else. At times it's bullish. At times it's bearish. At times it's exciting. At times it isn't. When it isn't exciting, that just makes the exciting times more exciting. And I love all the journalists trying to guess what that next thing is going to be. You know, it's like the Supreme Court justice trying to identify pornography. He can't, but he knows it when he sees it.
Right.
They have no idea what it is. Half of them are swearing it's wearables. Half of them swear it's VR. And there's some of them who I think are onto something, saying AR is going to be more successful, but I still don't think that's the next thing. And then some say wearables. What the hell drug are you on? This isn't some Hollywood movie.
Did you watch the new Netflix Rage Altered Carbon?
No. People keep screaming at me, I have to watch it. I have a hard time watching anything. I told my wife to watch it. Let me know what she thinks.
Well, other than the fact that it's largely soft porn, it's something I enjoyed watching. But by your point there, one of the technologies that is considered commonplace in this 380 what some odd year in the future is essentially a contact lens that is your wearable device. It's your communication device. It's your Google Glass, right? It's your virtual vision, and it's just a contact lens that you pop in, and it sort of glows as you're reading stuff. And while we are probably many generations away from that, I really think that is the kind of thing when people talk about wearables, that's what they're talking about. But it has to get to be that good first. And the biggest problem right now is energy. We can't power anything that small. We have small technology that we can't use because we can't power it because batteries are still giant.
Yeah, batteries have not made any significant improvements in almost 100 years kind of thing, where to power that thing, you'd need to walk around all day with the backpack on.
Right.
Because it's communicating with everything on the outside. And yeah. I do think that kind of thing will become prevalent, but it needs to be like not there. It needs to blend in. It is not going to stick out like some huge wrist strap on your arm, because that's too awkward and it's getting in the way and stuff like that. So I do think wearables will become more popular, but they have to be natural. They have to like be there. Like when you look at someone, a smartphone now, it doesn't look crazy out of place. It's just a little slab of glass. You know, it isn't some big Star Tech, 8-pound device like what we used to have. It needs to be small, out of place, not in the way. So I don't know where the future is going to be. I know this cloud stuff and this IoT stuff is only going to get more popular, because anything that makes companies money, they like. And if they can put a device in your house that you have to require updates from them for any reason for, they're all in. So, these controlling your lights, controlling your locks, controlling your temperature, I can see only becoming more popular, but I don't see that as really being a future thing. It's just a sensor and, a simple IO device.
Yeah,
to me, that's not future.
It's something I said before. We thought that the smart home was going to be the super smart computer that ran your house, and it's really a collection of really dumb things. And we're going to emulate smart by a collection of really dumb things. And I think, that's what the future is always going to be. It's going to be the neural effect, the net effect of combining dumb things to give the illusion of something really smart. It's worked for humanity.
Yeah, dumb, fast things.
Right.
The faster it is, the least dumb it's going to be perceived, and the more things it can talk to, the more it can come to a search among itself and figure out the least stupid answer. And we'll be like, that thing's pretty smart.
Right.
I look at right now, this time of technology is a great investment period, dare I say. This is the time where if I need a new phone, I'm looking at a new phone. If my wife needs a new phone, new phone. If I'm looking at tech inside my house, it's right now, I think, going to be a really good price. The mini computing market is hitting a really good stride right now. And to me, that's what I compare phones to, because they're the same basic technology, just lower priced. But I see those things starting to hit a really good stride where you're really going to get very close to desktop-like experiences for the normal person for about $100.
Yeah, and slightly related note, I forget which company it is, but one of the major telcos announced that my adopted hometown of Atlanta, Georgia, will be one of the first three cities they're going to roll out their new 5G network. You know, right now... It doesn't really matter much because there aren't any devices that can support it. But when that sort of technology, that ultra high bandwidth, is commonplace, that will change a lot as well.
Yeah, it was AT&T doing Atlanta, Dallas, and like two more cities. Right now, supposedly the highest end Samsung Galaxy 8 has 5G compatibility. I doubt you're going to get the maximum speeds on the networks, but I also believe you could very well perceive higher speeds than normal people on 4G.
Yeah, the promise of 5G is like ubiquitous 10 gigabit up and down. It'll never actually be that, but 6G, whatever that is that comes along, will be there. So, you know, within my lifetime, I think we'll see that, where every device everywhere without wires will have, you know, 10 gigabit bandwidth available to it. And the new technology doesn't get bogged down as multiple people use it like some of the stuff does. It's akin to the difference between a switch and a hub in the networking world. You can get something that seems like individualized performance out of a shared resource. So when that sort of thing happens, already we're seeing lots of barriers break down. I mean, you and I having this conversation right now could not have happened, you know, 15 years ago. The bandwidth wouldn't have allowed it. And you know, so once we see that sort of bandwidth be available to your palm top, to your car, to whatever else, to your watch, you know, that's going to really change things in a big way, but there's just nothing to announce yet. And I think those kind of things sort of sneak up on us over time. We look back over a decade and go, wow, there's a lot of things changed. How come I didn't notice that?
Yeah, the only way I can identify it is by the laziness of coding. And what I mean by that is when we all have 1 gig speeds to our palm, to our hand, developers have the ability to be extremely inefficient,
right,
and bloaty, just because they can, which means if someone like Steve Gibson is still alive and he is doing something, it's going to appear magical because it will be so fast compared to everything else that's out there. Cause you'll literally download, you know, 300 meg web pages.
You know? Yeah. So did Windows get bloated because hardware got cheap, or did hardware get cheap because Windows got bloated?
Chicken or egg. I don't think there's a right answer. I think they both saw an opportunity is what I'll say.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, a good example of bloatiness is an app that I found this past week. Actually, I'm lying right through my stinking little teeth. I didn't find this. I want to say it was Todd on Google Plus found this one for me. And I downloaded it, even though, bah humbug, I don't care about Olympics at all. Summer, winter, boring as hell. Can't watch them. Way too slow. And the announcers, I think, are the worst part of the Olympics. But I saw he posted this one, Snowboard Party World Tour Pro. And when I watched, you know, the guy who does drugs and sexual advancements on people or whatever, Sean White, obscenely talented snowboarding fellow. Like, he's the Michael Jordan of it, the Wayne Gretzky of it, whatever of it. And I saw this game. I said, I'm going to download this game and give it a try. If you didn't look, Mark, do you have any guesses on how big of a file size this is?
Well, looking at the screenshots, I'm going to say it's a gig.
It was close, I believe. I forgot. It doesn't show me file size in the full desktop browser. I do believe it was 680 megs to download, which was, ooh, man, I figured it was going to be big, but it is gigantic. Talk about inefficient. But it runs fine on my device. there is a little bit of loading in stages and screens, but once it loads, which is only a couple seconds, and my device is well over a year old now, ran like butter. I crashed a lot, but it ran like butter.
So, I always have to ask, what's the control mechanism for this? Is this a pan tilt? Is this thumbs on the screen? How do you control this? Because the videos and the pictures almost never show that.
Yeah, this is definitely a thumbs on the screen. I did not see any actual use case for tilt controls, because the left side, you have a joystick that you push forward and back to do front and back flips in the air, left and right to do spins in the air. And then on the right side, you had like four buttons. One was just ollie, one was rail slide, one was front grab, one was rear grab. So the controls are simplistic, but they are definitely on screen based. I'll just say, the first time I loaded Tony Hawk Pro Skater on a console, I fell a lot, but it didn't take really long, and I was doing stuff. I kept falling a hell of a lot in this game. I'm not a natural snowboarder, so I'm going to use that as my excuse, but it was fun when I was playing it. I put it on my kid's device as well. He had an absolute blast. I'm 99% sure it was completely free to download, no cost. Does have in-app purchases and ads, but yeah, it was 99 cents to buy. Todd posted it, I believe it was Todd, when it was completely free for like 3 days. So that's when I picked it up.
Nice. I would like to bring an app that is a rebirth of an app that we talked about in the past. We talked about at the time, I believe it was called Zcast app, which is my creation. I invented this app. I just didn't code it. And I was complaining, and have been complaining for years, that one of the things missing in the podcast community is the ability to feed back to the podcast community in real time. And I said, why doesn't somebody make a podcast player app that while you're listening to the show, you can type a comment and it's time coded, and anybody else who's listening to that show, whether it be, you know, 5 minutes or 5 years later, will see your comment in real time, quote unquote, to them, and you'll be able to reply to them in real time, and this communication happens organically over time. And a fellow by the name of Kaser Ejaz heard my cries and created an app. We talked about it before. We had him on the show as a guest, and I'll be honest with you, the Zcast languished quite a bit. It was a spare time project for him. It was in beta. It never really got out of beta. It had some significant bugs that not only did I stop using it, but I really couldn't recommend it anymore. But Kaser has come back, and he's decided he's going to make this something he's really going to focus his time and energy on, not just a spare time project. And as such, he's come back with Castback Plus. The Plus is the pro version. It's $2 to buy, and frankly, I consider that a good thing, because $2 means when you pay a developer, it means he's going to be developing for on the app that you paid him for. He and I have been, it's been released since early January, maybe even late December. And I've been his sole beta tester for much of that. And Dor and Eric have had some beta tests for it as well. And I'm pleased to say I no longer consider this a beta app. I use it every day as my daily driver podcast player. It does have the comments right now. Only my show and Dor's shows are the only people that are set up for comments, but it is there. But aside from that commenting, it is among the best general podcast playing apps I've ever used. It's smooth. It has, you know, a lot of the features that you would want. It's got playback speed up to 3x. It's got easy import and export. It's searchable. You can search the iTunes store. It's just a really solid app, and I'm pleased to bring it back once again to the show.
Yeah, I have no problem in saying this is now polished. Before, it was functional and it did most of the things, but there were certain things that were just broke. Now it is absolutely polished. The only feature it doesn't have is Android Auto, which means I can't listen to it when I'm in the car if I connect. Oh yeah, I forgot to say this. If I connect physically to my phone, they are going to soon enable Wi-Fi Android Auto, which I don't know how that's going to be any better, but if I connect my phone just via Bluetooth to my car stereo, I think there's a bug in the car stereo where I play a podcast or audio at all, and every like 10 seconds, a full second of audio gets dropped out, and it happens nowhere else on my phone. And when my wife connects her phone via Bluetooth, she doesn't have that problem. So it has to be that car's Bluetooth and my phone's Bluetooth not being completely compatible. I'm up to 3.5x, but I'm more than willing. In fact, I'll publicly admit, maybe I should listen at 3x and not 3.5x, because, you know, it's a little quick. I will give also just my when I remember weekly playback stats. It's been a quiet week, and I'm going to blame the holiday for that. This week, listened to 3 days and 23 hours worth of podcasts. Last week, listened to 6 days, 4 hours of podcast. So far this month, listened to 16 days and 9 hours worth of podcast. But I hate being out of podcast, is what I'm going to say. And that happened more than a couple times in the last week. In fact, it says I'm out right now. Maybe that's why we did the show, Mark. So, and here's the thing. I can't just change podcast players. Here's what I tell people to do. Go into your current podcasting application, disable automatic updating. So if you have your phone every 2 hours or 4 hours or 8 hours automatically checking for feed updates, the first thing you do is you disable that option in your current podcast player. That's all you do. Then you go into your current podcast player. I guarantee you there's an export setting under the main podcast listening. You output typically into OPML. You come into Castback. It has one of the best onboarding features I've ever seen on a podcasting app. Most podcasting apps are completely incompetent about the first launch sequence. He does a very good job of gently bringing you into the new environment, including, do you have something to import? So all you have to do is just launch the app the first time, point it to that OPML file. It will do its first time update. First time filling up that database will take a little bit of time. I subscribe now to like 148 different podcasts, so it takes a good 15 minutes, 20 minutes for it to populate the entire database the first time, and then it will start receiving updates. I really do encourage people, install this. Pause your current one, try this one out, and I guarantee you one thing, people. If you don't just look at it and have a problem with it and say it sucks and uninstall it, but you actually communicate you're having issues and here are the issues you're having with it, this is the kind of developer who will be utterly responsive to you. If you take a look at one of the big name podcast players, you'll see they literally have something like 10,000 reviews. What's the likelihood they're going to listen to you complaining about something? And I'll tell you, it's two. You have two chances. It's slim and none. In fact, I'm going to document this, Mark, and I'm going to put it out here right now. I'm going to document this and send it to him as a possible feature because he needs to differentiate himself. Here's the feature I want, and I already contacted two podcast developers, podcast player developers. Both of them said, I'm not doing that. Here's what I want. I find a new show. I hit subscribe, I come into my player, it then asks me to add a show. I want the ability to enable what I call, I don't know what to call it, time shift mode or time travel mode. Hypothetically, the show already has 100 shows under its belt. I want in some of those podcasts to say, now put me in this mode where when I hit subscribe, it's going to show episode one as being brand new, ready to download. And then in a set schedule, either the same schedule as the original show or accelerated versus the original schedule, start to then give me those shows and have them appear as new episodes in my feed without me having to go through each one and saying, up, market is new, up, market is download, up, add it to playlist. Instead, just say, there's 100 episodes, show it to me at 4 times rate. So if they released 4 episodes a week, four episodes a month, then in my player start delivering 4 episodes a week to me. So I'm in a time shift mode so I can listen to the past content without having to do lots of manual labor. Because as every day goes on, there are more and more and more and more podcasts that people are going to find that are way behind. And the example I'm going to use is Linux Reality. Go into iTunes, search for the word Go into iTunes podcast, search for the word Linux. Linux Reality is going to be in your probably top 4 search results. The show has not been published for over a decade. The reason it's in the top four results is because it's still probably the fourth best Linux podcast ever made. And I would like to hit subscribe and then have episode one delivered to me like it's brand new, and then listen to that show in its natural progression at its natural pace. I know it's a weird feature, Mark.
That's interesting. It'd be difficult to...
No. All it takes is one variable being stored. The date you added it, and then it's just a differential from the original date.
You just got to parse that feed every time you download it, and you'd have to store that variable somewhere. Yeah, I mean, it's easier. It's harder than it sounds, but it's easier than impossible.
Because, yeah, all you got to do is just remember the differential in dates. If it's 10 years, 10 months, and 10 days in the date difference from when I hit subscribe to the actual first show being out, then it's just a quite simple matter of using that date difference and then just keeping that consistent throughout time. It's a pain in the butt for them to do. That's the whole thing.
Silicon Dream in the chat room says, I can never understand why some podcast feeds don't have every show in them. It's a bandwidth thing. That's all there is to it. As your feed gets bigger, it costs you more bandwidth to serve that up to hundreds of thousands of users every time they download it. So they'll trim it to the latest 10 episodes or whatever, and that cuts their bandwidth down. That's the only reason to do it. If you're an unpopular show like mine with only a handful of users, that doesn't bother me at all. But if you have millions of subscribers, that could be a significant bandwidth with cost to have every show in them.
Well, yeah, it's twofold. One, it's bandwidth, but two, if you're using outside services, whether it be Feedburner, Podbean, Blueberry, Libsyn, blah 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 blah, all of them, to the best of my knowledge, limit your RSS file size to 1 meg. So you can't go over 1 meg. So if you have big notes, you might not even be able to get to show 100 before it says you have to shorten your feed.
Yeah. And that's, again, a bandwidth constraint thing on their end.
Yeah. And I don't want to say I don't blame them, but I almost don't blame them. It's just the nature of the beast, you know. But yeah, I am right now looking at asking my WordPress guy to give me full 100% RSS feed features. And the real reason is so I can take those feeds, give them to a third-party service, give them all 80-plus gigs of my files, and see if I can have them host all of the content in one repository and have one feed continuous for everything. And if it costs money, so be it. I will make it work somehow. But I like the idea of having every show available since the beginning of time, where right now, unfortunately, you go to Podnuts, almost no show goes back to episode one because HostGator technically turned my domain off, threatened me, told me I had to pay for their VPN, VPS service, which was easily $300 a month.
Right.
And you know, that ain't happening.
This will be a discussion for off the show, but Miles, the engineer guy on my show, has come up with a solution or discovered a solution that may make bandwidth or podcast hosting on a service provider obsolete, and it's like distributed, like torrenting for files for podcasts. We have a working prototype, and I'm about to jump into it and just start uploading my old content that way and see what happens. But anyway,
The number one thing is people are want to know is it truly auditable?
No, it's not trackable. That's the thing.
Nobody would use it.
You would have to, yeah. I don't know about that. I mean, yeah. It all depends on what your priorities are. Yeah, if your priorities are touting your numbers, and I have this many people, then that's the current system we have works really well. If your priority is making your content available in a decentralized and inexpensive way, like me, I don't care about tracking my numbers. I don't care about that, and so it's just not a thing for me. But you know, anyway.
Well, is he going to monetize this somehow?
No.
Then I don't see how he can beat archive.org.
Anyway, it's an interesting, it's a thing that's out there. It's not anything he invented, but there was something I was going to say, and it was important, and we've derailed me from it twice, so must not have been all that important.
Well, I agree, and here's one thing I hate, Mark. I wish people, instead of asking how many downloads do you have, they would ask something more important, like how much engagement do you have?
Or how much
not
influence.
Your number of Twitter followers, not how many downloads, but engagement.
Yeah. I have given up on making money as a podcaster. At one point, that was a thing I wanted to do. I have now realized that's just not going to happen. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. My logic is when you give up on it is when somehow it finds a way to you.
Right.
Oh,
that's what I was going to say. Dan Carlin, I don't know if you know Dan Carlin, has a excellent podcast called Hardcore History that has been languishing lately. He hasn't done many shows, but he has a unique way of funding his new shows, and that is his feed is like the last maybe four or five shows, and if you want to get access to the old shows, you have to pay for it. It's not much. It's a couple bucks, but I thought that's a good reason not to have everything in a single feed. You give them the last 10, and if you want the rest of them, cost you $5. Seems like a good way to monetize that, keep your bandwidth low. Only the serious people will be using your bandwidth, and you make a few bucks.
Right, and I'm sure he uses a hell of a lot of bandwidth, right, because he is my definition of passionate. He doesn't put out 5 episodes a week, 20 minutes each. He literally puts out like one episode every 4 months, but that one episode is like 6 hours long, right, and it takes you through a solid, you know, 200 years of X in such detail that if you told your teacher in school some of this stuff, they would be like, really? I didn't know that. Really? Because this guy is passionate.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. Check it out. So let me read the one email we have this week. And it is from Robert, who says, I often hear people saying tablets are not popular due to lack of apps. When I was in Thailand visiting my wife's family, I was shocked how many people use tablets as their daily driver. I attribute this to the following. Tablets include SIM option for data and voice when people were online everywhere in the market. And tablets with low specs were cheap and still had mobile internet. Just over $100 unlocked. Yes, we have a pattern. Even my nephew had an Acer. So I've never really heard that knock on tablets as lack of apps, personally. And my wife uses a tablet as her daily driver. I think for regular folk, people not like me and Dor, it's a functional way to compute.
And I'll say in our country, we at least not that long ago had just as many wired or heavy devices as we had portable devices. In a lot of other countries, it's wireless or nothing. So those kinds of places, I can see tablets being immensely popular, but the downside is very few higher-end devices. Very, very few higher-end devices. Just means that they'll be flooded with the $30, $20 tablets. And I don't see, and here's the sad part. Developers, manufacturers, and everybody go where the money's at. They're not going to go out of their way to innovate software platforms or application interfaces for those countries. So for us, it's a great couch computer, but that's about it. You know, look up that guy in that movie with that girl. Like we were watching Batteries Not Included the other night.
Yes, yes.
And I'm sitting there looking at the younger male lead and I'm thinking, I know this guy. He looks like Kenny Loggins. But who is he? He ain't Kenny Loggins. And so I got tired after like 3 minutes of thinking and I looked it up. Oh, there. Okay, that's who he is. But that's a good movie. I forgot about that movie.
Yeah, the concept of being online all the time, the SIM cards, like you said, Dor, it's definitely a third world thing because the U.S. in particular, Britain to a lesser extent, but here in the U.S., we invested millions of dollars early on in copper. You know, we had the Public Works Initiative, the telephone infrastructure fund was a thing, and we invested government funds and private funds into stringing copper all over this great land of ours. And so we have landlined and DSL and even today, you know, broadband internet, where most of the rest of the world didn't get communication technology to the masses until cellular became a thing. And, you know, you've got kids in South Africa that have a cell phone and are texting, but have never seen a computer. Not because they can't afford computers, but because they can't plug them into anything. So, yeah, it's just a difference in culture. And I would say in many ways, the U.S. has been holding innovation back because we have a good infrastructure. You know, it's the same. We're not going to invent the flying cars because we have interstates. Innovation follows need, and the U.S. just has not had a need for broadband in the way that, or wireless broadband in the way that other countries have.
Yeah. The term I always hear is leapfrogging, because other countries did not get on board like we did with cable and copper, and even some optical fiber, that they're going purely wireless in a lot of countries. And because of that, it's either that or nothing. So they put a lot of that out, and that base speed is higher than our average speed. Mm-hmm. So now if you take a look at the global charts of what kind of speeds we have as a country, the U.S. is not even by the top. I think we're like, I always want to say 17, but I'm not sure. It's not in the top 10, but you know, that's what happens. Countries have the ability to leapfrog.
And then lastly, I just want to say thanks to Deborah Chavez for your awesome Patreon pledge. Thank you for that, for your generosity. And if you want to be as cool as Deborah, you can go to patreon.com/AndroidAppAddicts and fund shows that are an hour of conversation with only two apps.
Well, because we're that damn good. I'll make it three real quick, Marcus. Here's a game I discovered, and this is almost a difficult for me to describe game. Now, I mean, when I stop and think about it in my head, I can, in my head, imagine everything that it is very easily, but to describe it is not that easy. It's a puzzle game. Okay, pause. You know how Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on the NES wasn't even a boxing game? It was a puzzle game. You had to figure out patterns. You had to know when to punch, when to dodge. It wasn't a sports game. It was a puzzle game. This is definitely a puzzle-type game. You're in a city. You're like part of the underground revolution. There's a clear path that you can see to destinations, and you have to time going from dot to dot, point to point, and you have to sometimes manipulate surroundings and backgrounds. Sometimes there's alternate paths where if you go, you can pick up extra bonuses, thus conveying more of the actual story that's going on. I found this game very visually appealing. When you die or get caught, it isn't like you go back a great distance in the game. You only go back a very short distance, so it's very easy to get back to that same spot. I will say I did have, I consider, genuine fun with this game. It's called Reformat Z, but it has like hard brackets and semicolons and stuff like that. It's going to be a link in the note by Blind Flung Studio AG, marked as an action game, E for everyone, completely free to download, no in-app ads, no in-app purchases. 111 reviews, 3.7 average reviews, updated December 21st, 2017, between 5,000 and 10,000 installs, version 1.1.0. I hate to say it, but because there's no ads, because there's no in-app purchases, because there's no price, is part of the reason why I don't think this game got much popularity, because it's plenty fun.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like your basic run, jump, tap game, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, I really, I'm not a huge fan of really like broad different types of graphics, but I like this one. It almost was like modern day Blade Runner. I don't even know how to explain this, but I liked it. Oh, it's good.
Lots and lots of 2 and 1 star reviews saying that it's slow and laggy. Did you have that experience?
I saw no lag. I actually loaded it on both my Huawei Honor 8 and I loaded it on my son's multi-year-old, I want to say 3-year-old, Oppo R7 Plus. And I saw absolutely no lag. I will say I can see the game being heavy, but I didn't experience any lag.
All right. Good to know. Anything else you want to bring?
I'm going to bring out one more just because I'm old and, you know, there's certain chords that get struck. And yes, Mark, you know where I'm going, basically. This, I believe, literally just came out. Street Fighter 4 Championship Edition. Champion Edition by Capcom. Action game. Does have in-app purchases. No ads. Free to download. 300 reviews, average reviews 3.3, updated February 20th, 2018, version 1.0.0. So it's new. Between 5,000 and 10,000 installs. This is definitely not Street Fighter 2 Turbo. This is definitely a later addition than that. You have people like Cammy in the game. This game to me was definitely clocked down from what I remember Street Fighter's game being. So it was natively, everything was a touch slower, but at the same token, it was definitely no doubt Street Fighter. Played much better on the GPD than anything else. And if I remember correctly, this was only compatible with like two or three of my devices. It was one of those things. It was so new.
See, I hate you for this because I have to download this game, and it doesn't matter how bad it is. I have to play this game because this is the poison that is nostalgia entering my veins, and it will take over my brain.
Well, is it even compatible with your devices?
Not. Okay. Phew.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Here's why I liked it. Okay. I have a USB controller here. That's a Logitech controller, which is kind of like PlayStation Xbox like. I take this controller with full USB out of it. I plug it up to a full-size female USB cable. The other side is a OTG cable. And then I downloaded this and put it on my Jide Remix 10-inch tablet. And I put the tablet up on the kitchen table, and I had the controller in my hand, and I'm playing Street Fighter. And I will say the controller worked damn good on it. But yeah, I was only able to put it on my GPD, and that was it. That and my Jide device. And I'm guessing because it's new.
Yeah. These graphics look every bit as good as, you know, the old Nintendo 64. That just goes back to what I was saying earlier. The thing that was cutting edge is now a casual game in your pocket.
Yeah.
Street Fighter Turbo, specifically, Street Fighter 2 was the game that sucked more of my life away than did Count Rugen in the Pit of Despair. I played that for so many hours. I preferred Balrog. Blanka, I'm sorry. And his shock attack was my personal favorite. I lived in a house at the time with five other college guys, and we all had different schedules and different things going on. And there was an epic Street Fighter 2 tournament going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We just rotate players in and out. As one would go to work or go to class, somebody else would sit down, and this tournament would just go on for months at a time. It was awesome. And when I see this, the nostalgia poisons me, and I have to play it. But fortunately, it's not compatible with any of my devices, so I can have my life back.
Well, one, to quote Princess Bride again, tell me how it feels. here was the thing. I watched a really good, I don't even know what to call it. It's documentary called Chasing Ghost, which if you want, Mark, you should be able to access my Plex and watch it because it's on there. It was all about the arcades. And two of the people on there, I believe two of the people, made it very clear. The actual death of the arcade began with Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Because it was the first game that you put a quarter in with the intent of playing somebody else and not seeing how far you could go. Like a huge percentage, like 90% of the quarters that went into that machine were to fight against another person, which wasn't really popular in arcades before then.
It's true. And in the Dallas area, I can tell you, you couldn't beat the little Asian guy. Every arcade I went into, there was a little Asian guy that just owned the Street Fighter game. And he just couldn't be beat.
Yeah, I wasn't old at the time that came out. Maybe 15, I don't know, maybe around there. But I remember there was always at least one little kid on playing either Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, Tekken, Virtual Fighter, or something like that, to which you could not begin to compete. Before that, there's only one game I remember that had head-to-head competition, and that was Karate Champ. And unfortunately, Karate Champ sucked as a game. So, you know, it didn't take down the arcade system.
All right. I think that's a good place to stop. You can't go past Super Street Fighter 4 Champion Edition. I mean, that is the ultimate of all things. So we have to stop now. Again, I've already flogged Patreon. Go in and give money to Door because he deserves it. Patreon.com/AndroidAppAddicts. His Patreon is set up by the month. So if you pledge a dollar, it's not a dollar an episode. It's a dollar a month. So just keep that in mind. And, seriously, as I've said before, if you find this show, if you don't find this show is worth, a buck, you know, then why are you listening to it? If you're listening to it, it must be worth something to you. So pay up, people. Sorry, that's rude, but it's honest.
hip. And I will say March the 1st looks like it's going to be episode 500. I will publicly say I have no problem if that show is nothing more than emails and communications. So I'll say if there's ever a week to write in an email or a voicemail, that is the week. If you want to, tell us why we suck. Tell us what was good. Tell us something you remember about the episode. Tell us something you wish we kept doing. You wish something we would stop doing. Anything. It doesn't matter. At AAA@podnuts.com, or you can send us a voicemail at 7076-PODNUT. Or should we just do a normal show? And the only way we'll know that is with direct feedback.
There you go. I think I came along just before episode 400, so I've been here 100 shows.
That does sound right. I want to say like 380-something.
Yeah. Maybe the new guy's not so new anymore, people.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us, Dor. As always, thank you for letting me come on and do this show. I enjoy it every week, even though I sometimes by 8 o'clock on Thursday, I'm like, I really don't want to do a podcast. Every time I get here, I'm happy to have done it, and I enjoy the experience. I hope you feel the same way. I hope you're happy to be here and you enjoy the experience. And we'll see you next week for episode 500 of Android App Addicts.
This is Martin from PodNuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other PodNuts shows on the PodNuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.